Underwater, a group of divers hold up white letters, Exposure Labs. In space, a bullseye forms a gold and silver letter G, Argent Pictures. Gray clouds sit on the horizon. Sunlight peeks through a gap in the clouds. A small boat is anchored in gently moving water. A diver fits a regulator to a tank. The valve's needle passes 150. He tests the regulator in his mouth by pressing a button. He clicks his underwater camera. He dons a full-face mask. Seated on the side of the boat, he falls backwards into the water. Bubbles rise and float in the dark blue water. Two divers float side by side. On the seafloor, brown coral is scattered amid white sand. A diver photographs a sea turtle that swims from under a large chunk of coral. The turtle swims up. The diver keeps close to it. Another diver has a tripod in the sand. The turtle swims slowly. The diver's camera flashes. The turtle passes a school of blue fish with bright yellow tails.
I've always been drawn to the magic of the ocean.
A pink fish swims above a purple-tipped anemone.
It feels like time slows down.
A shark swims just below the surface.
Most people stare up into space with wonder. Yet we have this almost alien world on our own planet, just teeming with life.
A golden brown jellyfish swims.
But it's a world most people never explore.
Words Appear, a Netflix original documentary, an Exposure Labs production, in partnership with the Ocean Agency and View Into the Blue, in association with Argent Pictures and the Candida Fund.
Richard Vivers is documenting the ocean's reefs the same way Google maps out streets.
Snapping a 360-degree picture every 3 seconds.
This is the 21st country that we've done as part of a global survey of coral reefs.
Hidden below the surface of the world's oceans, spectacular gardens of coral. Reefs are where much of the seafood we eat begins life.
Reefs are a source of food and income for over 500 million people.
It's really about trying to communicate the science as much as doing the science itself. Take people on a journey.
An incredible journey under the sea, which could be the closest many of us come to seeing an exotic underwater sight.
Giving anyone with internet access the chance to go on a virtual dive at many of the survey sites.
A search box, Great Barrier Reef. The divers operate a camera in a sphere mounted on a motorized shaft. A sea lion swims upside down toward the camera. A still photograph of a pod of sea lions. A manta ray flaps its triangular fins. Two rays rise toward the surface. The camera zooms close to a ray. Words appear, chasing coral. Schools of fish dart in the reef. In a high-rise building, a man with a messenger bag paces.
I used to be an ad man.
Richard Vivers, underwater photographer.
I spent 10 years in advertising.
XL Catlin.
Working at some of the top London agencies.
Seaview Survey.
Over time, you realize you're having these conversations about toilet rolls, and it's heated debate, and it's about selling 4-ply toilet tissue rather than 3-ply. And you go, I'm sure there's something better I can be doing with my life.
A boat sails toward green mountains under white clouds. Richard puts on an air tank.
I'd been diving since the age of 16. I used to go looking for these weedy sea dragons, which are these incredible animals. It's like a seahorse, but it's a dragon about a foot long that most people don't even know exists. But then one year, they were all disappearing from all my favourite sites. You know, this was one of my favourite creatures in the world. And you go, well, if it's happening to one of my favourite creatures, what else is it happening to? And that's when I realised one of the biggest issues with the ocean is it is completely out of sight and out of mind, and that essentially is an advertising issue.
An aerial view of the Earth.
You know, when you look at our planet, it's unique in the known universe because we've got an ocean that is the source of life, and it controls everything. It controls the weather, it controls the climate, it controls the oxygen we breathe. Without a healthy ocean, we do not have a healthy planet. How do you communicate these issues?
Two men pick up the 6-foot-long Catlin camera.
The project was called the XL Catlin Seaview Survey. What we wanted to do was reveal the oceans to the world. People were engaging with the imagery. They were going for virtual dives, but they weren't understanding there's a problem. So we had to really go back to the drawing board. And I think that was a shocking realization that we're only at the start of a journey.
Carey's Fort Reef, Florida Keys.
Okay, this one is going to be behind in the back reef.
So what year was this?
This is 1975.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
This whole area back here was just thick with Acropora,
right,
palmata, okay? The elkhorn coral.
And how much is there left?
Dr. Phil Dunstan, marine biologist.
0.01%.
Whoa.
Something like that. You'll see.
Yeah.
We'll go out and see.
Richard steps off the boat. He uses a handheld camera. It's attached to a collapsed tripod. He swims over a rocky brown surface. He extends the tripod legs. Sunlit water ripples across the coral.
So you want to know what we're looking at? This flat, this is all dead reef flat. This is all dead elkhorn coral. You can see all the skeletons in place, but there's nothing alive. So this is what the reef looked like in 1971.
Slender pink branches.
This is all covered with living corals. This is very typical, very, very typical of the Florida Keys. And 50 years ago, that wasn't the case. 30 years ago, that wasn't the case. All of it gone.
Phil looks away and swallows.
Phil told me that we've lost 80 to 90% of corals in Florida.
Phil and Richard swim over the reef.
I had no idea that these issues were so advanced.
Words appear. In the last 30 years, we have lost 50% of the world's corals. Richard drives.
I think it might be this one.
Yep.
Morning, I'm Richard.
Jim Porter, please.
Very nice to meet you. And thanks so much for coming down.
So all of this stuff that I'm showing you here is from 1976. This is Discovery Bay, Jamaica.
Yep.
And that's what it looked like then. And this is what it looks like now. This survey sat unanalyzed. Little bits and pieces, but not the whole story.
His imagery was designed for scientific purpose, but it doesn't capture you instantly without explanation.
This is what we have lost. This is the way it was.
Yeah.
I started my career in love with a place, and those places have diminished. To see that lost is very devastating.
A lot of scientists I've met have got really depressed about this issue. Whereas I've had the experience to do 10 years in advertising where you believe any problem can be solved in a ridiculously short period of time. You just got to do a bit of creative thinking.
Richard rides a boat that heads for a low island.
That's great. Lovely, thank you. Excuse me, sorry, do you know where Ruth is? Ruth Cakes?
And the classroom's right in here. All of those screens go up. So we'll go in and have a look.
Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. A tiny petri dish is set under a microscope. A blue light illuminates the dish. Richard looks through the eyepieces.
Oh, wow.
The image is bright green.
Wow.
Is it cool?
Unbelievable. Wow. Okay.
Dr. Ruth Gates laughs.
It's the fact that it's moving.
Isn't it amazing that after all these years, 25 years I've been working on coral, I can look down a microscope and go, bloody hell.
And I like that.
My understanding was this was an animal, this was an animal.
Yeah.
Are they the same animal?
They are.
But I know they're identical animals, but are they the same?
They are.
So they are one animal.
Yeah. It's so one animal.
Okay, but they're not considered... I thought a polyp was an animal, not a coral was an animal with lots of polyps. Does that make sense?
A coral is an animal with lots of polyps.
But a polyp isn't an animal.
Well, it's part of the animal.
Right, because this is no one's ever explained what a coral is.
Yes, your amazement is why did you not know that?
One is why didn't
I'm
I know that?
You didn't know that.
And it's the...
You're a smart guy. Yeah. What's wrong with you?
The living polyps on the monitor.
I get completely overwhelmed sometimes underwater on a reef because I can't believe that these structures are just sort of created by these simple organisms or seemingly simple organisms. I have the utmost respect for corals because I think they've got us all fooled. Simplicity on the outside doesn't mean simplicity on the inside. We think we're really evolved because we're highly complex beings. We can do lots of things. We have opposing thumbs. But corals... They've decided, forget the external complexity. Let's just be really sophisticated in a quiet way. A coral individual is really made up of thousands of small structures called polyps.
An animated graphic.
Each polyp is a circular mouth surrounded by tentacles. And they can combine to be millions of them across a single animal. They have inside their tissues small plants, these microalgae, a million per centimeter squared. The plants that live inside them photosynthesize, and the animal uses that for their food. They essentially have food factories living inside of themselves. So as the animal grows, what you see is the animal is growing over the skeleton and depositing the skeleton underneath it.
In time lapse, the green tentacles from the polyps flutter while the white skeleton forms.
They photosynthesize during the day. At night, the plants really essentially sleep and the animal comes active. They expand their polyps, the tentacles come out, and now anything that swims by is caught by these stinging cells that are on the tips of the tentacles. There are many different species of corals, and the different species of corals are different shapes. Some are very boring to look at. They look like big rocks on the bottom. Some are incredibly beautiful to look at. They have huge, huge branching patterns or massive plates. Some of them look like petals of a flower. These are foundation species. They have all these other organisms that depend on them. They are the reason we have reefs. A consortium of organisms that cooperate together that now manifests in this massive structure that can be seen from space.
Satellites travel high above the ocean. A single palm tree grows on a tiny island. Words appear, American Samoa, South Pacific Ocean.
There's a famous reef in American Samoa called Airport Reef. We heard that there was an area where the corals were turning white. Because we'd been there previously to do a survey, we wanted to go back and take the same images again.
Richard walks into the water with a camera on a tripod. Words appear, Airport Reef, American Samoa. Richard swims over white, spiky coral.
I was truly shocked by what I saw. The reef was white as far as the eye could see. To be honest, I didn't have the knowledge to know how to process it. Was this dead? Was it alive?
Camera in place, Richard turns it 90 degrees.
This is Airport Reef.
A still image on his laptop.
Before, so this is in December.
The coral is green-brown.
That's it now.
6 months later, the coral is white with patches of golden brown. Professor Ove Hoe-Goldberg.
When Richard saw that white coral, it was a turning point for him.
Coral reef biologist.
I think I admitted to him that I thought this was far more deadly than some of the other things that are facing reefs. And so what we've seen since the early 1980s when this first occurs, we've actually lost an enormous amount of coral just due to this phenomenon alone. I think that was the first time that he saw the enormity of the issue, that this was a threat across the planet to coral reefs, which would happen very quickly and cause a lot of damage. Back in the 80s, we started looking at this weird phenomenon. Large sections of reefs were turning white, literally over a couple of weeks. And no one really knew why this was. As we did more and more experiments, it turned out that it wasn't a disease, wasn't too much light. And the only thing you could do in an experiment that would cause corals to go white was to raise the temperature by 2 degrees Celsius.
Normal temperature, pink-tipped coral.
By the end of my PhD, we were putting cautious words in the literature saying, well, you know, maybe this is global warming and this is one of the early impacts on reefs.
2 degrees warmer, the coral is white with spots of golden brown.
We look at climate change as if it's an issue in the air. And you go 1 or 2 degrees Celsius, does that really matter? But when you talk about the ocean, it's like your body temperature changing. And imagine your body temperature rises 1 degree centigrade or 2 degrees centigrade. Over a period of time, that would be fatal. And that's the seriousness of the issue when you look at it in terms of the ocean.
Coral bleaching itself is a stress response, much like a fever in humans is a stress response. If the temperature spikes just a little bit above their normal range, corals will start to bleach. The small plants that live inside their tissues, their ability to photosynthesize and feed the animal host is impaired. The animal essentially senses that I've got something inside of me that is not doing what I expect it to do. And as happens with us, when we get a bacteria, we try to get rid of it as quickly as possible. That's exactly what these animals do. They try to get rid of those plants that are no longer functional and leave behind the transparent naked tissue. They've lost the very most important food source that they have, so it's starting to starve.
The transparent polyp with fewer brown microalgae.
When the coral bleaches, the flesh becomes clear, and what you're seeing is its skeleton underneath. So the bright whites that you see in the pictures is just the skeletons everywhere.
If it's a very clean white look about the coral, it will still be alive. It's not allowing anything else to grow on it. It will generally not grow. It will generally not reproduce. It is likely to die. You'll see these fuzzy microalgae. The whole surface suddenly become much, much fuzzier to look at. That's an indication that that coral has died.
Thick, furry, dark purple-brown strands wave from coral branches. On a laptop, images of round, white coral.
Coral bleaching is very difficult to communicate. You see a picture of a beautiful white reef. Is that a good or a bad thing? So we need to communicate it in a different way.
In an airport, Richard pushes a luggage cart.
I was flying on a plane and I watched a film, Chasing Ice. That film was about the documentation of the disappearing glaciers. And it suddenly dawned on me that we had almost identical projects. So pretty much as soon as I got off that plane, I contacted the director.
Jeff Orlowski.
The cameras are shooting every hour, but we're only showing every, you know, week or 2 weeks.
Richard sent me an email completely out of the blue, and he attached two photographs, one of a healthy coral reef and one of a dead coral reef. And when I saw those photos, the light bulb immediately went on. It's like, if you can document that change, you can reveal this to the public in a powerful way. So we knew from the start that there was something that we wanted to get involved with.
These were chosen, these images. And then
we started talking pretty early on about what a time-lapse camera could look like. But we were missing this one piece. We needed a wiper system or something that would keep the glass clean.
Zach Rago.
When Richard and the team wanted to do underwater time-lapse, they approached us to design something.
So this one is a little dirty.
We designed a magnetic arm that pulls a windshield wiper around this glass dome and keeps it clean for long periods of time.
When we first met them, the deadline seemed just absurd.
Trevor Mendelow.
Nobody's done anything even close to this. We had all of the issues associated with just dealing with the time-lapse, the camera, but we also had just so many unknowns.
A base rotates under a camera.
When you have a camera system that you need to be submerged in salt water for months on end, that is subject to huge storms and hurricanes, at depth with all the tremendous pressure of billions of gallons of water pressing down, that is very, very difficult to do.
If we're tethered to a BeagleBoard or Raspberry Pi and SSH in, I need at least 12 volts. Probably get away with 11.
Well, then we could use a 12 to 5 for the Beagle. Let's just say 300 milliamps.
Okay.
12 minutes a day.
7.2 watt hours.
7.2 watt hours, yeah. Okay.
Cool.
Well, I think this is going to be pretty easy.
They're 3D printing parts. They're building custom circuit boards. They're building custom wireless hotspots. It is really, really complicated.
In animation.
Person in boat wirelessly connects to a computer in a case which is hardwired to an umbilical cable that goes down to a router inside an underwater housing that communicates wirelessly to the camera. When you're done, you just unplug it.
This is by far the most complicated thing I've seen built by View Into the Blue. At the time, Jeff and Richard had no idea that I was a coral nerd. Secretly, I'd been sitting in my office really stoked that I was even in the same room as this project about coral was going on, and we were helping support it because I wanted more than anything to do something for the coral.
At an aquarium.
These are lobophilia. The chalices are either Oxypora or Echinophilia, Mondastria, Phobides, Favia, Platygyra. Actually, that might not be. I got involved in the aquarium industry at a pretty young age. Growing up in the mountains and in Colorado actually made my obsession with the ocean a little bit worse. See, on this coral, there's like a lot of life, but then there's a lot of like death here. So this is just skeleton. So that could very well be because it got too close to this euphilia, perhaps, and they fought with each other. And this one stung that one to death right there.
He just loves coral. Even to the point where he has coral reef tanks at his house with no fish in them. And nobody has coral reef tanks with no fish in them.
The beauty of coral, or why I enjoy coral more than fish, is because if a coral dies, it's your fault. As long as you don't mess up and like crash your tank or kill that coral, then they're all gonna continue living. They're just perpetual machines. They don't really have a life expectancy, more or less. They just kind of continue to go on as long as their environment allows them to. That's the same with like jellyfish too. Jellyfish technically live forever, but they just get eaten by so many things that doesn't happen. For me, the most interesting thing in nature is symbiosis. Two separate organisms that have adapted to each other and are now benefiting each other. They're working together, and the first thing that comes to my mind is an anemone and a clownfish.
Two orange and white fish rise from pale orange tentacles.
The anemone provides protection for the clownfish, and the clownfish usually provides food for the anemone. It's a mutually beneficial relationship. In the case of a coral, it goes deeper than that. The symbiont itself is incorporated in the organism. The coral doesn't exist without these little tiny plant cells. They are completely reliant on each other, and you don't have one without the other. That relationship between the two of them is the most interesting thing in the world to me.
A blue and white coral with green and orange tentacles. A coral with bright green ridges and pale green mouths. Another with orange, green, blue, and pink tentacles. Time lapse of green tentacles pushing up through the sand. The mouth is gray. The polyp contracts and expands in a burst.
Is the color change fairly uniform, or does it do this?
Don't know.
But the Postellaporus could go overnight,
right? It's never been shot in the wild before. That's what's so thrilling to me about what's going on here, is that it is going to be the first time that we'll actually be able to ask that question.
Yeah.
But the Postellaporus could go overnight, couldn't they?
Yeah, actually, a lot of the Postellaporus have already gone.
So they're just completely white?
They're white already.
But the Montiporas are the important reef-building corals.
Montipora and Porites compressa here are the two. And Lutea, that big one that you saw.
And what's the tissue thickness on Porites?
So they can be down a half a centimetre.
Do the fertilised gametes carry those zooxanthellae to many colonies?
In Hawaii, we have a very high proportion of the coral species there.
Smiling, Richard looks back and forth between the two biologists.
We knew this was going to be incredibly hard, predicting where to put a camera down. And we thought, well, we just need to do this wherever the bleaching is happening.
Good morning, Mark.
Good afternoon, Richard. It's getting a little depressing.
Yes. I read your email, which was, you know, about the El Nino starting earlier this year.
Mark Aiken provided us with the tools to be able to understand where we should be going.
So what we're looking at this point is...
I work for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. We use satellites to look at the sea surface temperatures that cause coral bleaching. The one thing the temperatures have shown us, with no question, is the oceans have been warming.
A graph.
Temperatures in the ocean go through normal cycles. If the temperature were staying constant, then all those ups and downs would be around that average temperature. But now we've reached the point that we changed that average. Your warm temperatures keep getting warmer and warmer and warmer. The first widespread bleaching event occurred in the early 1980s. 97, 98, this was the first global scale mass bleaching. A lot of corals bleached, a lot of corals died. 2010, only 12 years later, we saw the second global scale mass bleaching. Now, only 5 years later, we've got the potential of the third global-scale mass bleaching event.
Subtitles. Basically, at this point, about two-thirds of the northwestern Hawaiian islands are seeing a level of warming where you're usually seeing bleaching.
I'm zooming in on Hawaii, and you can see here it's 4.7 degrees hotter than it should be at this time of year, and you look at some of the other hot spots around the world, it's 11.3 degrees, 5 degrees hotter, 8.2 degrees hotter than it normally would be.
There's this big heat wave that's travelling around the planet, and it's killing corals wherever it's going. This is a small window of opportunity that we've got right now to be able to capture this bleaching event and communicate it in a massive way.
Normally, we would have done extensive field testing with these cameras, given how complicated they were, but they just needed to be put in the water.
A tech sets the clear spherical housing and base in a padded shipping case. Denver International Airport. A small rental truck is unloaded.
Well, we have a lot of bags. I'm not sure how happy the airport people are going to be.
One-on-one.
So guess what we're up to right now? We're whittling plastic away from the underwater solar panel.
Otherwise, we can't take it on the plane.
Bits of shaved plastic litter the airport floor. They reweigh the case.
99.5.
Is that good? A graphic of the Earth.
So based on the data that we got from NOAA, we decided to put cameras down in Hawaii, Bermuda, and the Bahamas.
We'll go down, we'll scout, we'll find a bunch of spots, we'll mark the GPS coordinates.
Right around that corner.
A chain on a line drops into the water. Divers follow. Camera one, Bahamas. A rectangular case hits the sand. Andrew Ackerman, dive master and underwater cinematographer.
This was completely different from any other scuba diving I've done, and any other scuba diving that one would normally do. This was construction underwater.
You're working in an environment that humans weren't built for. You also can't communicate with your team other than through sign language, and we are not good at it.
So the camera gets mounted flush to this display, and we can adjust the height of this, and we can adjust the angle of this.
A shelving unit sinks.
You're in zero gravity, so if you're trying to get leverage to put something into the ground, you don't have that. You're floating, you're buoyant.
Camera three, Hawaii. A diver hammers a rod into the sea floor.
That's a weather alert.
I hear crackling sound.
On board, camera four, Hawaii.
I hope that's not lightning.
Oh my god, that's lightning.
Do you hear that?
Yes, I hear it in my microphone.
I think you should probably turn the cameras off. I don't know.
Can we shoot the metal thing down?
I kind of don't want to touch it.
Underwater.
Because of this vacuum-sealed glass dome, we couldn't actually change any of the settings inside on the cameras. So they attach this wire going to a box on the boat on the surface.
You have a cable attached to a stationary device underwater, and it's plugged into a very delicate piece of equipment.
Boom, we're in. Now let's see if this is going to behave today.
And you can sit there on the boat with a tablet, and you can adjust the settings, and you can see what the camera is doing underwater.
Watch this cable. Can you move us a little closer? I'm just nervous.
The smack is getting too tight.
Hold it.
Zach jumps in. He swims with a case.
The wind just took us. The stern anchor didn't hold. We're just drifting.
Zach returns to the boat with a case. On the boat, he opens it. Water covers circuit boards.
Bummer. Excited?
Zach empties it. He sits and covers his head with his hands. In a hotel room.
All right, so let's take a look. So basically you got a few millimeters of water in there, probably splashed on an electrical connection, probably blew
definitely.
The 12-volt fuse.
It
you're
did
probably
blow the
fine.
12-volt.
Here is what that's looking like at the moment. We've kind of tore her apart to access her and attempt to clean.
Jiminy Cricket, look at that mess. Okay, we're going to be just fine. I basically would like you to take 12 volts directly from the battery.
A boat moves in the water. A tech feeds cable to divers in the water. Camera 3, Hawaii.
All right, let's give this one more try. All right, here goes everything.
Do we have a new message?
Oh. We're good. We connected.
Camera 4, Hawaii, underwater.
That does look killer. Look at that. That is brilliant, man. I have a file on my computer. Woo! All right, we're done.
What?
We're done.
We're done.
The wiper rotates.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so happy right now.
This is awesome.
Another boat travels toward an island.
After that, there was nothing to do but wait.
moving away from two divers over a reef. They become specks. Tiny neon blue fish dart in the reef. Zach Rago, coral nerd.
As a kid growing up, I always had this sweet spot for taxonomy, which I don't really know how to put my finger on that. I always wanted to know what things were, and I wanted to know the scientific name. So I fell in love with catching all these little critters and coming back and having a bunch of guides to help me figure out what they were.
Photo of young Zach.
And so when I got into coral, there were only a handful of resources from one guy, this guy, Charlie Barron.
Vintage film.
Every time I was looking something up, there he was.
There are about 340 species of coral on the Great Barrier Reef. There's one just over there that's about 6 meters high.
The Reef Builders, 1986.
For all intents and purposes, he's the godfather of coral reef science. He's the first guy to really go down and start cataloging corals, and I wish I could be that guy, but I was born a little too late.
Here we have thousands upon thousands of species all interacting together in a complex way. Corals, unlike any other form of life on Earth, except man, have the capacity to build their own environments, to create their own habitats.
Think of a city. Corals are experts at creating high-rises. They're basically creating this incredible dimensionality, this three-dimensional framework. The more complex a structure, the more biodiversity can potentially live there. In a healthy coral reef system, the entire landscape is covered with coral. They're competing for space with one another. They grow over and under.
You look at the Great Barrier Reef, it's really the Manhattan of the ocean. This hugely diverse and complex city. And like in a city, the fish are living in very specific places.
Dr. Justin Marshall, marine biologist.
It's a bit like a neighborhood. You go back to a neighborhood and you see the same people. The same fish is living in the same piece of coral week after week. They live there pretty much their entire life.
Dr. Joanne Klepas, marine biologist.
In the morning and the afternoon, you actually have traffic on the reef. You've got fish which have like spent the night on the reef and then they go out to feed and all swim together. So they're busy places.
Time lapse of fish on a reef.
When the sun starts coming up, you actually have a morning chorus, which is similar to what we get when we hear the birds waking up in the forest when the sun comes up. When you listen closely, you hear things purring. You hear the grunts and the groans of so many different animals. It's not a silent world at all. It's actually pretty noisy.
Each fish, each animal has its own job. It does its own thing. There are fish that farm. They actually grow little plants or algae, and they'll go pick a piece of algae and plant it and look after that area. There are crabs and lobsters and little shrimps that will do things like defend corals. There are strange partnerships, like moray eels, which will hunt with coral trout. Completely different fish, but they work together to hunt across the reef and they share the meal. One of the things you notice is this sort of crunching noise, and this is the parrotfish. These are fish that have beaks, and they actually eat the coral, and they're crunching away at the coral. When that coral passes through the parrotfish, it comes out as sand. So in fact, every single beach, you're basically walking on parrotfish poo.
Coral reefs are hugely important for the ocean because they're essentially the nursery. And they say something like 25% of all marine life relies on coral reefs.
Dr. Mark Aiken, NOAA Coral Reef Watch.
We've got 500 million to 1 billion people that rely on coral reefs as their main source of food.
Without that protein, they're going to be malnourished. Their culture, their way of life, their economies are all reliant on healthy coral reefs. And many of the new drugs that are coming to help humans come from the sea.
Dr. James Porter.
There's a drug called prostaglandin that comes from sea fans, and that fights cancer. There's another one called bryostatin that comes from coral rhizoans, and it fights cancer too. There are so many things that we don't know yet that could help society through the novel chemistries that we find on coral reef organisms.
Coral reefs are producing a breakwater that's protecting us from big waves, from cyclones. They're better than the ones that we can produce because they're growing and rebuilding it all the time.
The corals are the real basis of that ecosystem. You can't have a city without buildings. And you can't have a coral reef without the corals.
A tall, fat, green, finger-like coral rises from the reef. On a boat, Zach dons his mask. He falls back into the water. Words appear. 2 months later, algae covers a gray case.
So we went back to the Bahamas to retrieve camera number one after its time.
Zach unbolts the base from the shelf. He rubs it as he floats up. In a hotel room, he dries the white plastic flange. He removes the clear housing.
We're going to keep our fingers crossed and hope we have plenty of footage.
Hoping that there's at least a month and a half.
He inserts the memory card into his laptop.
Bingo. That's out of focus. All of these are out of focus. This is a big bummer. In focus. And then the first one after that's out of focus. And it progressively gets worse. You see that? All of this footage is out of focus. And pretty much useless.
Zach shakes his head. Hawaii Camera 3 retrieval. Trevor removes a screw from the base. He inserts the memory card into his laptop.
We're out of focus here. I thought we were okay. Damn it.
So, how bad are the images?
Bad. Not usable. But
unusable. And so it's already soft.
Yep. And there it gets softer and softer and softer.
I've never heard of manual focus changing over time.
Hawaii bleached. It had the worst bleaching it's ever had. It's just that we didn't manage to capture it.
We'd put a lot of effort getting those cameras down, and we thought we'd done everything right. And it's a huge knockback. More so because we knew the clock was against us. We didn't know how long the bleaching event was going to last.
Richard retrieves a camera. Dusk over the reef.
I've been looking at the latest sea temperature values for the Australian region, and it's definitely warmer than it's been for quite a while. That coastal area is probably going to continue to warm.
Yep.
If you're into bleaching...
Professor Ove.
This is a good sign.
Yep.
Of course, it means horrible things for the reef.
30 seconds.
Zach and Trevor went all in and just fixed the problem.
Square that pops up on the screen.
We changed to a fixed lens, and it allowed us to get rid of all of the focus issues that we had. We have such a better system going. I'm much more confident it's going to work.
The Denver Aquarium, Phase 2 camera test. Zach lowers the camera into a tank. Two aquarium divers set it in place.
Awesome! The thing's red!
A camera films a group of children looking into the tank. One of the divers gestures okay. an overhead view of the Great Barrier Reef, Dr. John Charlie Farran.
I'm standing on one of the 2,500 or so enormous platform reefs that make up Australia's Great Barrier Reef. But very few people can realise that this is the largest structure ever made by life on Earth.
A graphic of Australia.
These reefs extend along the tropical coastline of Australia, a distance of over 2,000 kilometres, the length of the entire east coast of the United States of America.
I always wanted to go to the Great Barrier Reef. I want to see it for its beauty and always wanted to get there. That's the goal. Always been the goal.
Zach boards a small plane. Subtitles. You're about to see the GBR from the air.
That's actually a very exciting thing.
Zach films with his phone. Jeff holds a large camera. Subtitles. It's just amazing to think how massive it is. And it's all alive. The reef extends to the horizon. Waves roll against it. It has patches of pale blue. Tiny coral islands sit in turquoise water, moving over greenish-brown reef to deep blue ocean on the horizon. A seaplane lands.
So we're sending two teams to the southern Great Barrier Reef. We're sending Jeff and Zach to Keppel, and we're sending Andrew and team to Heron.
Dots on a map of the east coast of Australia. A boat bobs in the water. Camera 6, Heron Island. Harry's bombing. Divers set up a shelf. They gesture. On the boat, a case is opened. The camera goes in the water. Camera 10, Keppel Island, Monkey Point. Divers plug in a cable. The wiper rotates. They tighten zip ties. The camera's screen boots up.
The camera's in, and it's running. The most smooth that any of these have gone.
So much smoother than Hawaii.
Jeff walks on the beach with a camera on his shoulder.
And then we waited. Waited for that warm water to come.
NBC News.
Already, biologists say some corals are dying, bleached white. A sign in the first stage of death.
You're talking
today.
An event similar to the rainforest of the world turning white over a very short period of time. Everyone will be jumping up and taking notice, wondering what the hell is happening.
You may think, well, this is just a cycle that we go through.
Good morning. Coral bleaching in Hawaii has gained a lot of attention, so much that...
This certainly isn't a natural cycle. This is a phenomenon directly attributed to climate change, and it's something that we've only seen in recent years.
Dr. Justin Marshall.
One of the ways of looking back in time with a reef is to take coral cores or slices through coral. You can look at growth rings in corals in the same way as you can look at growth rings in trees.
Australian Institute of Marine Science, Dr. Neil Canton.
You can see a regular, normal growth pattern. This coral grows at around a centimeter and a half per year, every year, right up until 1998, where you start to see the signature of a coral bleaching event.
By tracking back in time, by looking at the history of the reef, we're absolutely certain that what we're seeing now is not a natural fluctuation. The cause is unequivocally global climate change driven by emitting carbon into the atmosphere.
I think a lot of people don't realise that climate change is happening because most of the extra heat trapped by greenhouse gases has been transferred to the oceans.
A graphic of the Earth's atmosphere.
When you burn fossil fuel, that's burning oil, gas or coal, carbon dioxide goes up into the atmosphere. Carbon dioxide has the property that it's able to trap heat. So the more you have in the atmosphere, the greater the amount of heat trapped by the Earth. It's a bit like putting extra wool into your sweater.
Professor Ove.
What people don't know is that 93% of the heat that's trapped is going into the ocean. That's a lot of energy. If the oceans weren't doing this job of absorbing the heat, the average surface temperature of the planet would be 122 Fahrenheit. There are rates of change going on in tropical oceans, which, if projected forward,
1999.
Means that coral reefs are a likely casualty of any global climate change. I published that in the peer-reviewed literature. At that point in time, people weren't quite ready for that, and I had a lot of colleagues that were confronting me, challenging me, attacking me.
He was ridiculed for this, for being an alarmist, but over time he's been proved right time and time again.
I just love the reef. That's why I did this thing. That's why I came here when I was 18 to this island and started to study the reef. It wasn't because I thought it was going to disappear or I was trying to battle a problem called global climate change. It's unfortunate that I can't look at this thing and still see the beauty. I see the problems.
On a boat, Professor Ove takes a photograph.
This wonderful thing, this thing that's been around for a very long time, is threatened in our lifetime and on our watch. And however hard we try to get people to listen, it seems to be lost in the wind, you know?
The sun sits on the horizon. Words appear, Keppel Island, 2002. On a catamaran in bright blue water, Keppel Island, 2016, a diver jumps off the side. On shore, a diver hoses off a Zen underwater camera. Day 37 on the GBR.
Storms and the weather is really the controlling factor right now. The wind and the storms continue rolling through and we get cloud coverage. We might not see a whole lot happen here at Keppel.
Zach scrolls through weather data on his phone. CNN.
Tropical cyclone Winston, the strongest tropical cyclone ever recorded in the southern hemisphere. The big threat going
for the first time, we felt like we were in the right place at the right time. And when Hurricane Winston happened, all of that changed. It caused a lot of cold water and a lot of rain to come to the southern Great Barrier Reef. Part of me is happy that the corals aren't going to bleach here. Actually makes me ecstatic to think that they're gonna make it through this event. But at the same time, we've tried so hard to capture this.
Day 43 on the GBR.
We essentially had to make a really difficult decision to stick to our original plan with less than ideal odds, or we go check out some of these other portions of the Great Barrier Reef that were getting really warm.
All of this to the north of New Caledonia and below, and even these splotch areas of alert level 2. It's just nothing short of catastrophic for the coral.
We know now New Caledonia is bleaching, Lizard Island is bleaching.
Day 48 on the GBR.
So I guess it is a simple decision in some ways that we should just pick up and move over and reset up at those new locations.
The problem is the time-lapse cameras. It'll take weeks to move those systems and we'll have missed the bleaching.
A snorkel diver checks a camera.
We're gonna have to figure something else out.
Heron Island.
I went to turn my computer off, and there was this message from Jeff saying, how soon can you pack?
Andrew Ackerman.
We were going to abandon these camera systems and do manual underwater time lapses every single day. I think we as a team realized that there was no going back.
We headed up to Lizard Island, and the other portion of our team went out to New Caledonia.
A map. Lizard Island farther north and New Caledonia south and east. A plane flies, then lands. Lizard Island, northern Great Barrier Reef. A diver films with a handheld camera. The coral has begun bleaching.
The most amazing reef
and it's just demolished.
Zach floats.
It's just so hot. Like, it literally feels like a bathtub.
He drops his snorkel on the deck and dives back in. He picks up a floating styrofoam cup.
Did anybody order a large Coke? Here we are talking about coral reef bleaching and global climate change. And here's our other problem.
When we went to Lizard Island, we didn't have our time-lapse cameras anymore.
The idea is to take one tripod and one camera and get as many shots as we can in as many positions of as many pieces of coral as we can. And to repeat that every single day.
Get on the boat at 9:15. Go out to your first site. You would find your markings for the tripod, put down each leg at the correct height, and then you would have reference points that you could then attach the laser beams to, and then I had a lamination of the first day's shots, and then you would take 2 minutes of footage, and then you pick everything back up, move on to the next site, and do the same thing over again, and then again, and again, and you do that essentially 25 times a day. Between Jeff and I, we had 60 sites.
The reason we built the time-lapse systems was it seemed absurd to have people camped on the beach at multiple locations and having to go down and do what a machine is designed to do.
Logistically, it was a nightmare. Getting in the right position and you're fighting the current, so you're getting bounced around a lot, your knees are bleeding everywhere, your body is cut up, you're tired. Well, it got to the point where you're spending 4 hours a day underwater. Weird things start happening.
Zach mimes smoking coral. On the beach, he puts on a wetsuit.
I don't know if it's funny.
The legs bulge with water. He hops.
It's, you do what you have to do.
An outboard engine is started. An anchor is tossed. Zach tosses his tank in and dives after it. A tripod is placed in the sand. Laminated photos are held next to coral. A diver climbs aboard. Jeff pulls the starter cord. An anchor is tossed. In time lapse, gray-white clouds move across the sky. From a rocky shore, they speed toward the horizon as the tide goes out. The tide ebbs at a dark brown gravelly beach. Day turns to night. Zach and Jeff build and light a fire on the sand. They sit in folding chairs. Jeff adds wood to the fire. Fade to black. In a plane, Richard aims his camera out an open window.
We were getting reports that the corals in New Caledonia were doing something completely weird.
New Caledonia.
Richard was there, and he said, it's the craziest thing I've ever seen. I don't know what it is. The locals didn't know what it was. We didn't know what was happening. And I asked Richard to explain it to me. He's like, I don't know, it's a glowing.
A diver steps off a dock. The branching coral is white and purple. Dark gold fish swim above the coral.
This was different. The corals were fluorescing.
Richard photographs a bright yellow coral.
They're producing a chemical sunscreen to protect themselves from the heat. You can't even describe it. They were the most vivid colors I've ever seen.
A spiky, bright purple coral amid similar cream-colored corals. A still photo. A yellow-green, shrub-like coral and dark blue water, green island, and blue sky above. The spiky purple coral around pale pink coral.
This is the most beautiful transformation in nature. The incredibly beautiful phase of death. And it feels as if it's the corals saying, look at me. Please notice.
Moving away, the vivid purple coral with patches of white and dark brown. divers return to the dock.
We were diving every day from a floating restaurant. That was kind of funny the first day. Like, that whole thought just became much more depressing.
Richard climbs on the dock. Subtitles, bit of a shock. In his wetsuit, with his camera, he weaves through the guests who wear shorts.
This is one of the rarest events in nature happening, and everyone's just oblivious to it. And you can't blame them for it. I mean, it's just almost typical of all of humanity.
A DJ spins.
This is going on, and no one is noticing.
Richard steps through a hatch into a cabin.
We designed something originally to do this project without emotions. And when we began doing this manually at Lizard Island, you have the emotional ties to it. You are down there. And to sit there for a month and every single day watch something new around you die that you saw yesterday, just difficult.
Andrew and Zach sit in the bow of a boat. Zach's head hangs. He tosses his tank overboard and drops over the side. Words appear, day 107 on the GBR. Gear on, he takes a spool of rope.
You forget what it looked like at the beginning. And some days when you go back and you're sitting down there looking at it now and it doesn't look real. And you can't even accept it.
He bites his lip.
And then you open your eyes and it's dead as far as you can see.
Brown coral. He swims slowly past the brown reef, arms crossed. Wisps of brown algae flutter from the branches of coral.
It's algae and dead coral skeletons.
A piece of skeleton floats encased in the algae. A wide, flat, circular coral has some lavender fluorescent patches and long wisps of algae along its edges. Zach gestures to his goggles, points to the coral and signs, rapid tissue necrosis.
It's flesh, it's a living tissue that's rotting away. It's disgusting, really.
He breaks apart a chunk of dead coral that turns the water a milky color. He rubs the viscous substance between his fingers. He shakes the coral, and more of the rotting skeleton clouds the water. He writes on his notebook, "This is the hardest dive I've ever had to do." He climbs onto the boat, sets his camera down, and removes his goggles. He sits on the gunwale and stares off.
I thought we would find bleaching.
In an office.
I thought we would capture it, but I don't think I ever prepared myself or thought we were going to see this.
In a sink, he rinses laminated photos and his notebook. Words appear, "Last day at Lizard Island." He puts the items in a bag. He rinses a shirt.
It's like I'm not even mad that I believe it because it's just so miserable here.
He sits and stares off. On a plane. He looks down at the brown reef.
When coral bleaches and dies, you're losing the coral animal. And that's a shame because it's a beautiful thing. But a coral is a fundamental part of a huge ecosystem. It is, in a way, just like the trees in a forest. If coral reefs are lost, we're affecting the life of a quarter of the ocean. The little fish disappear, the big fish disappear, and then you can look at humans as one of the big fish.
A crowded beach.
It's easy to think about the fate of an individual species. But what is a little harder to explain, it's the beginning of an ecological collapse of the entire ecosystem.
A graphic.
It's more than the species, the genus, the family, the order. We're talking about the possibility that entire classes of organisms would go extinct.
Labels on a brown and white tree of life taxonomy. Professor Ove.
When scientists say they're researching climate change and coral reefs, it's not about whether or not climate change is happening or not. It's really the uncertainty between knowing whether it's going to be bad or really bad.
A graph.
When we look at ocean temperatures, there are a range of projections of how they're going to change into the future. If you take the average, in about 25 years, all across the planet, the oceans become too warm for coral reefs to survive. That means they'll bleach every year and they won't be healthy enough to recover.
Dr. Ruth Gates.
Coral reefs will not be able to keep up. They will not be able to adapt. And we will see the eradication of an entire ecosystem in our lifespan. That is a very gloomy statement. But unfortunately, it is true.
Everything on our planet is connected. What we're doing is pulling out the card called coral reefs from this house of cards. And the real fear is that we'll take out enough of those cards where the whole thing will just simply collapse.
If we can't save this ecosystem, are we going to have the courage to save the next ecosystem down the line?
Do we need forests? Do we need trees? Do we need reefs? Or can we just sort of live in the ashes of all of that?
A diver over an expanse of colorless reef. Fade to black. In a car, passing low green hills, words appear. Queensland, northeastern Australia.
So tell me where we're going.
We're actually just going to Charlie Veron's house. He used to literally sit behind a desk for hours a day using Charlie Veron's coral lists to ID things. Like, he was the boss. He was the information that I used on a daily basis to learn everything that I know of corals. And now I'm about to go sit in his living room and interview him. So that's quite a big step.
The car turns into the driveway of number 10.
Hello.
Hello. Charlie.
How are you? I'm Zach. Pleasure to meet you.
Zach follows Charlie into the house. In an office, Zach takes a selfie.
While I was in college studying evolutionary biology, I actually got a job at an aquarium, and so for 5 years I grew coral, used all of your work to teach myself as much of coral taxonomy as I possibly could.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So I was very nervous about it coming here. So.
Oh, I'm not the sort of person to be nervous about.
No, but
yeah.
I guess I just want to hear your perspective of the change that you've seen over time.
Then it was totally different mindset because the reef was there forever. There was no question about it.
Yeah.
I even wondered why you would want to make it a marine park because it's so big and nothing's going to touch the Great Barrier Reef. But it's changed enormously, and this bleaching and the degrading of the Great Barrier Reef that I've seen in my lifetime, it really upsets me.
Up at Lizard, we essentially have fluorescing or bleached corals going through their entire transition to death and being covered in algae.
Covered the whole thing. Yeah, way to go. Yeah, the whole horrible, horrible, ghastly mess.
Yeah, it was actually quite difficult while we were up there. I got quite frustrated a few times where I just didn't want to be there anymore. I didn't want to watch it anymore. I was over it. And
I'm glad I'm not your age. You know, I'm ready to check out when the Great Barrier Reef gets trashed because it's been the most loved thing in the physical world of my life. You know, I've been diving on it for 45 years. And I'm damned if I'm ever going to stop until I go completely senile. I'm going to keep going. And if as long as I can influence people, I will. Because we have to.
Absolutely.
I've got no choice. You've got no choice, I'm afraid. You've got to keep at it.
Yeah.
You've got to. Because otherwise you're not going to like yourself. When you're an old man, you think, you're going to like yourself much more if you can say, well, I sure tried to turn that around. And maybe I did influence people here and there. Don't let anything stop you.
Charlie leafs through a book about corals.
He's got to get my glasses.
Zach stands in the office with his arms crossed.
Losing the barrier reef has actually got to mean something. You can't let it just die and it becomes an old textbook. It's got to cause the change that it deserves. Us losing the Great Barrier Reef has got to wake up the world.
Hawaii Convention Center, Honolulu, Hawaii, in a hall. Words appear. The world's leading coral reef scientists have gathered for the International Coral Reef Symposium. Charlie sits in the audience. Zach enters the convention center.
I usually get to these things and you start kind of almost shaking.
I definitely have a little bit of nervousness going.
Zach sits with Richard.
How much talking is too much talking? Is getting personal a bad thing? Like talking about art, this one was one of the more difficult sites for me to go back to a month later.
Yeah, really good to show that it actually affected you.
Right, okay.
I think that's really important and good. As long as you don't start crying.
Yeah.
Zach scrolls through photos of the dive on his laptop. He sits cross-legged on the floor next to a podium and metal cases. In the hall, Charlie looks at his phone. Professor Ove sits next to Ruth.
So over the last 2 years, we've been amassing a huge amount of bleaching imagery from all over the world. Now Zach's going to show you some of that imagery. So if you want to pop up, Zach.
We spent the last 4 months in Australia and we documented the ongoing bleaching event. And so I wanted to just show you what our team was able to document.
In time lapse, a branching bright purple coral turns white, then brown. Before and after photos. A wide, flat, lavender coral turns white, then brown. The before and after photos. A woman in the audience presses her lips together and shakes her head. Tiny blue fish dart in a tubular coral. It turns from white to brown.
In just 2 months, we've lost the majority of fish life on this coral colony.
The before photo. The after photo. A man sits with a finger over his mouth. pale pink coral with lasagna noodle-shaped appendages loses bits until it has disappeared. Before and after photos.
The soft corals disintegrate. Fields and fields of soft coral that then just turns into a barren rock face. I didn't even think it was possible.
A branching coral turns white, then brown. Three men sit, hands covering their mouths. A wide pink coral turns and dies. A close-up of a white branch becoming covered with algae. A woman covers her eyes. Another woman wipes her eye. More before and after photos.
This has been a mortality event on a massive scale. 29% of the corals on the Great Barrier Reef alone have died.
29% of the Great Barrier Reef died in 2016.
To lose 29% of the coral animals in a single year, it's just mind-blowing, the scale of this bleaching event.
I think the most shocking part was how widespread it was, because it affected almost all the reefs from Lizard Island north through Torres Strait.
A map.
And it was severe. It's the equivalent of losing most of the trees between Washington, D.C. and Maine.
The affected reef section moves over the U.S. East Coast. Well,
this isn't just the Great Barrier Reef. This is a global, massive event.
There are a large number of places that are experiencing bleaching right now, and that's why we need help. We're looking for people who have access to a local reef to help photograph what's happening in your own backyard. If you are a diver, please join our effort and
everybody's come together that saw our call out.
Moving on a map to St. Thomas.
At this point, we are under bleaching threshold and under a warning alert for bleaching.
Behind me, you can Mexico. See we have the Akumal reefs. Basically, we've seen all on is almost completely bleached.
Water temperature
El Salvador.
Has been rising and the coral has been bleaching.
You're talking about the Caribbean 2 years in a row. You're talking about Hawaii 2 years in a row.
Hawaii.
This last summer was especially horrific. 25 to 50% of the coral is already long since dead.
We know that the waters here started warming up in May 2015
Kiribati.
To about 3 degrees Celsius above normal.
Subtitles, most of the Acropora, the most common branch of corals, are dying. Vanuatu, because the climate is still changing, the temperature of the ocean is still rising. The El Nino this year has bleached what's left.
Some of the reefs here have been under major stress, like so Papua
New Guinea.
Places across the globe.
We're here in the Republic of Palau.
I'm currently in Cebu City,
Philippines.
The corals in this region have been bleached over the past month.
Bali.
The coral is 75% bleaching, and about half of them is dead already.
Christmas Island.
Mass coral bleaching event happening here on Christmas Island.
20 degrees centigrade, and a lot of the reefs around Sri Lanka were heavily bleached.
Thailand.
It is happening right now.
The coral here are showing mass signs of bleaching.
Maldives.
And for that reason, we have mass mortality rates.
Seychelles.
The Boston of Boris started to show signs of bleaching.
I've been helping to capture images of coral bleaching in the Red Sea region.
Egypt.
Has occurred here recently. There was a bleaching event.
This bleaching event has been the longest, deadliest and most widespread in history. Based on current trends, within the next 30 years, annual bleaching will kill most of the world's corals. If we don't address the warming of the planet, we will lose this ecosystem and millions of people will suffer. In a wetsuit, Charlie sits in a boat.
I get cross with myself.
Dr. Charlie Viren.
Because I don't think I did enough. I didn't make enough noise when I realized what was happening. I didn't do enough. Zach has an option of being part of that fight. Maybe Zach will say, Charlie, he's just a gloomy old man, and we can fix these things.
They dive together. Words appear. Charlie, Zach, and Richard are diving on one of the healthiest reefs remaining on the Great Barrier Reef. It was unaffected by the recent global bleaching event. The saucer corals are dark pink and gold. Fish move in the current. The divers take photographs. Clownfish swim among tubular anemone with magenta tips. Zach's waving hair resembles the anemone he photographs. Neon bluefish with gold tails swim over the reef. In a classroom.
How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Are you guys excited?
Yes.
Let's go diving.
Individual viewers reveal a 360-degree photo of a reef.
I see a fish.
Take a look around. In my mind, all kids are born scientists. They're born adventurers. They want to explore. If we can get the kids to hold on to that curiosity, then our planet would be a much better place.
I could see a stingray.
Turtles, fish, corals, crabs, starfish, you name it. It's all there, right?
We're going to take you on an expedition to go see the third global bleaching event.
I think having been on the journey that I've been on, I should be the most depressed person on the planet. I'm seeing the ecosystem that I've fallen in love with die before my eyes. Having said that, I'm not actually depressed.
People hold cardboard viewers over their eyes.
And that's because there's been a big shift. You look at every piece of climate change action, and it's about improving people's lives. Creation of jobs, reducing pollution, greenifying cities. It's essentially a great transformation that is already beginning.
It's not too late for coral reefs, indeed for many other ecosystems that are facing challenges from climate change. It's still possible to reduce the rate at which the climate is changing, and that's within our power today.
It's all achievable. It's not like we don't have the money. It's not like we don't have the resources. It's not like we don't have the brains. This is inevitable, this great transformation. And that's what makes me so optimistic, is all we got to do is give it a bit of a shove.
Cut to black. Words appear. The following countries have committed to be powered by clean energy. A three-column list as of May 2017. And so have these American cities. Also three columns as of May 2017. To learn what you can do, visit chasingcoral.com.
I was just born, I was just born. I've been crawling till I learned to walk.
Previous credits. Executive producers, David J. Cornfield, Linda A. Cornfield, Ryan W. Arends, Jill K. Arends, Ben Kottner, Jason Spingarm-Koff, Lisa Nishimura. Edited by Davis Kumbi. Cinematography by Jeff Orlowski, Andrew Ackerman. Music by Dan Romer. Saul Simon McWilliams. Co-producer Stacy PQL. Produced by Larissa Rhodes. Directed and produced by Jeff Orlowski. Credits continue. featuring Richard Beavers, Zachary Rago, Dr. John Charlie Viren, also featuring Trevor Mendelow, Andrew Ackerman. Written by Davis Coomby, Vicki Curtis, Jeff Orlowski. Zach and Trevor have converted a school bus into a coral reef classroom. They are taking the oceans on a tour to kids across the country. Richard and his team founded the Ocean Agency, dedicated to one client, the ocean. They have launched an initiative called 50 Reefs to find and protect coral reefs that can be seed banks for the future. Baby sea turtles emerge from the sand. Till we see the pieces that'll break. Tell me how long, tell me how long, tell me how long will it take till we wake up, till we wake up. Tell me how long, tell me how long, till we wake up. Close-up video of coral tentacles. A single sea turtle climbs toward a sandy ridge. The ocean lies beyond. The setting sun sits on the horizon. A diver carries swim fins along the lapping water. Zach stands on a rocky outcropping overlooking the ocean. The turtle inches toward the sea. The team went back to retrieve the time-lapse cameras. This time, they all worked.
Tell me how long will it take till we wake up, till we wake up.
Original song, Wake Up, by Dan Romer and Terry Geiger. Produced by Dan Romer. A list of Global Call contributors follows. The turtle struggles to climb and falls on its back in a depression with some water.
Tell me how long, tell me how long. Tell me how long, tell me how long. Tell me how long will it take till we wake.
The turtle's head rises above the ridge, then he falls. The turtle crests the ridge. It moves faster on the wet sand to the lapping waves and is seen underwater. Words appear. This film is dedicated to all the young people who can and will make a difference. Fade to black. This film was made carbon neutral thanks to Renewable Choice Energy. www.chasingcoral.com. Exposure Labs. Copyright Reef Project, LLC. 2017.